Standing at the far end of the street was a man whom Ah Suk had not seen in over a decade, and whom Ah Suk had believed prior to that moment he would never see again. His old acquaintance was very much changed since their last encounter. His proud face was much disfigured, and a decade in jail had lent a muscled bulk to his chest and arms. His posture was familiar, however. He was standing with his shoulders slightly rounded, and the backs of his hands against his hips, as in the days of old. How strange, Ah Suk thought later, that one's gestures remain the same, even as the body changes, weathers, and gives itself over to age, as though the gestures were the real vessel, the vase to the body's flower. For it was Francis Carver, through and through, to stand with his hips cocked slightly forward and his shoulders hunched, a posture that would have been slovenly in another man. But Carver's presence, grave, dark, and imposing, was such that he could afford to neglect those rules of carriage that other men were obliged, by virtue of their very mediocrity, to observe. Carver half turned to cast his gaze down the street, and Ah Suk leapt sideways out of view. He leant against the rough pine of the grocery store wall, and waited there a moment until the beating of his heart had slowed. The full account of Suk Yong Sheng's history with Francis Carver was not yet known to Kui Long, but Ah Suk did not recount the full particulars of the story at this time. He explained to his host only that Francis Carver was a murderer, and that he, Suk Yong Sheng, had sworn to take Carver's life as an act of vengeance. He gave this information almost carelessly, as though it were altogether commonplace to swear vengeance upon one's foes. In truth, however, the source of this carelessness was pain, for he did not like to dwell upon the unhappy details of his private past. Ah Kui, sensing that this was not the time to interrupt, only nodded, but he stored the pertinent facts away, resolving to remember them. Ah Suk continued his tale. He remained for several seconds with his forehead pressed against the rough cladding of the grocery store wall. When his breathing was steady, he edged back to the corner of the building to look at Carver again, for to look at last upon the face that one has conjured in one's most vengeful dreams is a pleasure of the most rare and passionate sort, and Ah Suk had conjured Carver's image in his sleep for nigh on 15 years. His hatred of the man needed no renewal, for he had renewed it alone every night. But he felt, upon perceiving Carver now, a surge of sudden fury, unfamiliar, uncontrolled. He had never hated the man more than he did at that instant. If he had a pistol, he would have shot him at once and in the back. Carver was speaking to a young Maori man, though from their respective postures, Ah Suk guessed they were not familiar. They were standing slightly apart from one another, as affiliates rather than as friends. He could not quite hear their conversation, but from its rapidly staccato nature, he guessed that they were bartering. The Maori man was gesticulating very firmly and kept shaking his head. At length it seemed that a fixed price had been agreed, and Carver, taking out his purse, counted several coins into the Maori man's open hand. He had evidently purchased information of some kind, for now the Maori man began to speak at length and with exaggerated motions. Carver repeated back the information to fix it in his mind. The Maori man nodded his assent and spoke a little more. Presently they shook hands and parted ways, the Maori man eastward towards the mountains, and Carver westward towards the mouth of the river and the quays. Ah Suk considered pursuing Carver at a safe distance, but decided against it. He did not wish to force a reunion with the man until he was prepared for such an event. At present he was unarmed, and he guessed that Carver had at least a knife about his person, and possibly also a firearm of some kind. It would be folly to accost him when at a disadvantage. Instead, Ah Suk set off in pursuit of the Maori man, who was on his way back to the Arahura Valley to build a bird trap, having purchased from the Hokitika dry goods several yards of strong fishing line and a small loaf of hardtack to crumble into bait. Ah Suk caught up with him in the next block and caught his sleeve. He begged to know the import of the man's conversation with Carver and produced a coin to show that he would pay for the information if necessary. Te Rau Taufare looked at him inscrutably for a moment and then shrugged, took the coin and gave his explanation. Many months prior to the present day, Tofari said, Francis Carver had offered him a monetary reward for any news of a man named Crosby Wells. Soon after this offer was made, Carver returned to Dunedin and Tofari to Greymouth. The two men did not cross paths again, but, as chance would have it, Tofari did then meet the very man for whom Carver was searching, and Crosby Wells had since become his very good friend. Mr. Wells, Tofari added, lived in the Arahura Valley. He was a former prospector, and had given his life over, more recently, to the project of building a mill. Tofari spoke slowly, and with much gesticulation. He was evidently well used to communicating with his hands and his expressions, and paused after every clause to make sure that he was accurately understood. Arsuk found that he could understand his meaning very clearly, though English was neither man's native tongue. He whispered the names to himself. Arahura Valley, Tirau Tofari, Crosby Wells. Tofari explained that he had not seen Carver again until that very morning, the morning of the 14th of January. He had spied Carver upon the Hokitika waterfront less than half an hour before, and remembering the offer the captain had made many months ago, he saw an opportunity to make an easy profit. He approached Carver and announced that he could offer news of Crosby Wells at a price if Carver's offer was still valid, which evidently it was. They agreed upon the fee, 2 shillings, and once the coins were in his hand, Tofari told the other man where Crosby Wells was living. Arsuk, in what he had understood of Taufari's narrative, had discovered nothing that was of immediate use to him. However, he thanked the man very courteously for his information and bid him goodbye. He then returned to Canieri, where he found Anna Wetherill sitting in a patch of sunshine beyond his front door waiting for him. Feeling suddenly tender towards her, any reminder of the troubles of his past life tended to furnish Arsuk with a wealth of redemptive feeling about his present. He made her a present of a fresh half-ounce, cut from the new block of resin that he had purchased from Pritchard that morning. She wrapped the gift in a square of cheesecloth and stuck it into the band of her hat. Arsuk then lit his lamp, and they lay down together, waking only when the air began to cool with the coming of the dusk, whereupon Anna took her leave of him, and Arsuk turned his mind to supper. The goldsmith Arqui, to whom this was being narrated at a great pace, found that his impression of his guest was rapidly changing. Arqui had never cherished a very great regard for Arsuk, who was clothed always in the conjured shadows of his reeking smoke, who shunned the company of other men, who squandered his meagre profits at the